as we move into the autonomous space, as, you know, the reliance for the driver to have direct input with the vehicle in terms of controls, that's why this whole connected experience is so important. That's why manufacturers, car companies are investing millions, billions in partnerships with other entities that can ensure, as AVs, autonomous vehicles, ramp up, that they have a place at the table with the experience that's going to occur in the vehicles.
By definition, telematics is an interdisciplinary field that encompasses telecommunications, vehicular technologies, road transportation, road safety, electrical engineering, and computer science. It started through the popular OnStar emergency calling system, and it's evolved to things like LiDAR, adaptive cruise control, and even Bluetooth and Wi-Fi connected services.
Wisco, I don't understand telematics. How does that benefit a working mother of two who has a penchant for nice cars?
Well, Kelly, at some point, your kids will be driving, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic, only practical, that one of your kids may be involved in an accident. And it would be great if you received a notification on your phone when the airbags deployed in your child's vehicle. This is vehicle telematics, or a better, more relevant terminology is a connected vehicle experience.
In this episode, we hear from John Bucci, who was the divisional leader of Toyota's telematics department. John was one of the leaders who pioneered the beginnings of Toyota's connected vehicle experience. Sharing the history of what it was back in the early 2000s, John's frame of reference is immensely important to understand, so we know where to move with the future of this connected vehicle experience. Because as a working mother, it is very necessary to me to be able to ensure my kids' driving future is safe and secure, I'm looking forward to learning from John.
Listeners, stay tuned to hear about 20 years of telematics from John Bucci. I'm Dennis Wisco.
Alongside Kelly Cruz.
And this is Wisco Weekly, where we share the voices of automakers, automotive retailers, and transportation professionals who are driving and shaping the future of automotive.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Chicken brown cow. Listeners, good Lord. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wisco Weekly. Super, super thrilled to be in Marina Del Rey, California, to record this episode with my guest here. Certainly, as I've been talking with many, many people in the automotive and transportation industry, telematics is a particular field that often people use as a buzzword, but you know, when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of it, there's not a whole lot of people that can describe it. So my guest today is going to be doing exactly that. Our guest is John Bucci. John was the divisional leader of Toyota's Connected Vehicle Technology Department from 2008 until 2013. Leading a team of 150 members, they launched Toyota's first telematics program, dubbed Intune for Toyota and Inform for Lexus. John is well-versed in telecommunications, business development, strategy articulation, project and program management, partner evaluations, and RFP management. Sounds real nerdy. Having logged 39 years in the automotive space, John was inducted into the Telematics Update Hall of Fame in 2016. Here to discuss 20 years of telematics, listeners, please welcome Mr. John Bucci.
Dennis, it's a pleasure to be here. That intro, the chicka brown cow, whatever, I've never heard anything like that, and I'm just excited. That really got me going. Happy to be here.
Well, you'll be happy to know that's kind of the it's a joke of an introduction to
inappropriate videos.
Okay. Well,
and you're excited.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and you're excited to be here. So that's it worked. So, John, as I had mentioned in the intro, telematics is often a field that a lot of people use as a buzzword, but in terms of the hardcore, hey, how does this work? You know, what are the particulars of it that are that will contribute to the future of automotive and the future of transportation? There's not a lot of people that can articulate that either at the dealer level or at the transportation level. You led the team at Toyota to develop their first telematics program, and so I wanted to ask initially here then, when you started that program, what was the problem Toyota was looking to solve at that time?
Well, I think the problem was we wanted to stay competitive. We were seeing the activity with GM and OnStar in the space. Toyota had actually launched something similar in the domestic market, Japan. And they were in the market with these telematics services, but we clearly needed to do some quick study and catch up. It was about being competitive. And at the time, safety and security was paramount. You know, of course, airbags had been around for a while. Various new features were coming into play in the vehicle space that were the early underpinnings of ADAS, Advanced Driver Assistance Safety Systems. But the concept of telematics would be able to connect our customers with emergency call centers and provide that extra added measure of safety and security that our customers continually talked about in surveys as being important to them day to day.
Now, so that's the interesting thing here, right? Because the evolution of telematics, or I shouldn't say that, because there really hasn't been, at least in my eyes, an evolution just yet. But from a customer standpoint, telematics is not sexy. It's not attractive, right? However, as technology in general has evolved, and as users are being able to, or drivers are able to plug in their phone, sync their phone to their car via Bluetooth or USB. You get now app sharing through Apple CarPlay and whatnot. In a lot of ways, safety and security is kind of being being filtered out in hopes of cool things. Is that a fair statement to make?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It and even the cool factor is sort of tempered a little bit now, because I think everyone's trying to sort out what is the best solution. Is it the curated app suites that are sort of maybe on their way out that the OEMs launched back in 2010, 2011 timeframe, which was really the beginnings of Intune? Or is it all about democratizing the access through Android Auto and CarPlay? But safety and security was really the sort of hot ticket, the entry into the space. It allowed the OEMs to, you know, put this embedded device, literally a phone that connected the vehicle and the occupants with the outside world to deliver, you know, emergency services, roadside assistance, and so forth. But you're right, that is now sort of seen as the price of entry, and it's in the background and it's expected. But once you, as a vehicle owner that has the ability to push a button and contact a call center and to hail emergency services, once you've experienced that, and you may remember, maybe your audience, you know, remembers the real life phone calls from OnStar, you know, customers and drivers with an emergency call center, it's the real thing. I mean, I too was driving a Lexus once on I-5 and witnessed right in front of me a horrible accident, and was the first to, you know, to hit that button and to get emergency service out there. So, But you're right. It's that safety and security is like table stakes now, and it's not sexy, it's not cool. But once you use it, it's pretty impressive.
Now, was the initial adoption, the initial implementation of telematics from a safety and security standpoint, was that I mean, was that fueled more by some kind of adherence to DOT regulations, or were you guys just trying to follow suit from what GM was doing with OnStar?
Well, the GM solution, OnStar, and Toyota's solution in Japan were very, you know, from a timing standpoint, were almost identical. We were really trying to keep pace with where this industry was headed, and we wanted to learn. We wanted to get our toes in the water, so to speak, and understand what everything needed to be in place to deliver the service, not only the technology, the technical side, the engineering. That these systems are not just sort of duct taped into the vehicle. They're deeply integrated. So it was clear that the vehicle needed to evolve from simply a transportation device into something that is truly connected to the outside world. So we recognize the importance of it, and you can see now where the industry is going. The word telematics is probably not used that much. But the connected vehicle,
yep,
and connected mobility has sort of taken its place. And I'm fortunate enough to have been involved in the beginning of that, and had a choice of either sticking with a current role in my company or launching a new division in this space. And it's been wonderful. It's a great ride, and it's still on an upswing. The hockey stick, you know, upslope on activity in this connected mobility infotainment space is still really progressing.
So let's simplify this even more. Tell me, what were some of the particular features that are included? And this can be maybe specific to Toyota at the time, or other manufacturers what they were producing. But what were some of the features included in telematics system?
Well, in general, there was safety and security. So how that presented itself for the driver occupant was an SOS button that was positioned somewhere in the vehicle, usually in the overhead console area. And that button connected you with a live operator that immediately had an open channel to the vehicle. They could talk to the occupants if there was a need for, you know, fire, police, ambulance. That operator would then open a warm line, as it's referred, to a 911 or a PSAP, a public safety answering point, which is like your typical 911 entity, and they would dispatch the necessary, you know, services. So safety and security, the ACN capability, which is automatic crash notification. And that was a feature where any airbag, and at the time there were probably a dozen, there's many more now, any airbag deployment would automatically issue an emergency call to the call center. And the protocol for us and most of the industry was to dispatch emergency services no matter what. If an airbag deployment occurs, there's been an event that probably needs someone. So we wouldn't ask questions. But what would happen is the line would be open to the vehicle, and the emergency services operator could begin talking to the occupants. They could start to get a sense of what was the situation in the cockpit, in the interior, how many people were in the car, the state of affairs. And some of that information could then be transferred to emergency tech as they were approaching the scene. So ACN, automatic crash notification. Roadside assistance was another feature. The same kind of thing could either be, you know, with a button push, you could hail the same operator and they would dispatch, you know, towing a capability, give, you know, ensure that they had fuel on board the tow truck, or, you know, assist with whatever else, towing to the nearest, you know, dealer. There was a feature that not many people were necessarily aware of at first, but the ability for the car manufacturer to pull from the vehicle important diagnostic information, the state of oil, state of the vehicle, engine function, any malfunction indicator light that you would see on your dash would be conveyed to this, you know, information center that the car company would maintain. And that would enable a communication monthly with the customer that would give them sort of the state of their vehicle, the state of its health, you know, the state of the subscription to the service that we were providing, or that other automotives were providing. And that was sort of the first CRM tool, if you will, a monthly email to customers and,
Was that coming from the dealer or the automaker?
It was coming from the automaker, but because of the, you know, some sensitivity with the selling dealer or the servicing dealer, at least in the case of some industry car companies, they would list both in the email that, you know, if there's anything that you need at your dealer, here's your selling dealer. Sometimes people buy a car in one part of town and they have it serviced elsewhere, you know, so they would give acknowledgement to both. But So, emergency services, maintenance reminders, and those were the primary sort of, and really they're sort of rudimentary services at that time, but they were Herculean to deliver also at that time for people new to the industry and the business.
Yes. Yeah, so actually there's a couple different points on there. I'm going to see if I can try to tackle here. So one, when it came to the maintenance reminders, for instance, or not reminders, but the data of the maintenance and then that being communicated. I would think that in today's day and age, since technology has empowered customers, and customers now are the lifeblood of any business, more so now than at any other point in history, and customers can be very high maintenance, I have yet to read, hear, or see anything with regards to how, in this case, maintenance data is just popping up on the screen of the vehicle, but not just even popping up, but also kind of providing the language that would inform and hopefully enlighten the driver, right? So like one of the examples I always think of is, okay, I commute from home to work and it's point A to point B. My commute's 30 miles. I'm averaging 24 miles to the gallon. It'd almost be nice if the car told me, hey Dennis, if you woke your ass up early at 7:30, you could take your 24 miles to the gallon and increase it to 32 miles to the gallon. And if you took this road instead of the freeway, whatever the case, right? That type of user experience isn't here yet. Is that an imaginary world?
Well, it is there in some respects. I know that the Prius has a program in place where, and we actually launched it, where Prius drivers could share their driving experience with each other. It's these sort of, you know, hypermilers, you know, who sort of have a friendly war with each other as to who's getting the best fuel economy.
I remember that.
And that's out there. And that started in Japan, and the idea migrated over to us, and we actually had experience with these owners who become zealots, with respect to, you know, who's driving best. So there's new mapping functions that are, you know, knocking on our door, where routes that not only serve to the user the best from a traffic perspective, but also it is in play with over-the-road trucks, where if there are many hills involved in a route where an over-the-road truck is taking a heavy load from, you know, LA to, you name it, Chicago, the smart routing software capabilities will route them not only through their requisite way stations and waypoints in order that they're required to check off with, but also the flattest roads that will afford the best fuel economy and best wear and tear on the vehicle. So smart routing is out there, and it's bound to get.
Is that the name for it? Smart routing.
It's what I call it. It's the industry sort
Boom.
Of.
Boom! We're patenting that.
Do it.
You heard it from John first. Yeah. Smart routing.
There's involving the virtual assistant, the Cortanas, the Alexas, the Siris of the world. You know, starting at home, Alexa, send, you know, to my car, the smartest route that gets me from point A to point B, not only with the least traffic, but with other things I need to consider. I need to stop and get coffee or, you know, those types of things. So I think as it relates to maintenance, OEMs or car companies are already beyond experimental stage, but they're getting to a place where if a malfunction indicator light, or we call a MIL, appears on your dash, now there, with certain manufacturers and certain levels of deployments, there's a rudimentary screen that'll tell you what that means. When you see the check engine light, that instills panic in the average person. They want to run to the dealer right away, and
it installs panic to enthusiasts, probably even more so, because then they know that probably for the modifications they did to their car all of a sudden that light comes on. It's like, oh crap,
what did I do?
Yeah, that's a $10,000 bill I'm going to be getting here soon.
Exactly. But there might be a screen on the IP that gives you some basic information. Not to worry, you need to see your dealer or something along those lines. But then connecting one step further, it might be offering owner's manual information that you could call up through a smart virtual assistant or, you know, press a button on the dash. For instance, I'd love to know readily and quickly, what's the tire pressure setting for my car? I have no idea, you know, and some of these, you know, gas station tire pressure gauges that are connected to the air hose are not too accurate. So rudimentary, where's the spare? Where's the spare tire? And again, I'm speaking, Dennis, with an enthusiast, but for the average person, tire pressure, where's my spare? You know, how do I do such and such? When's my next scheduled, maintenance, interval? Those kinds of things will be made readily available through a voice assistant or through some other interface on the dash.
Well, so in furthering talking about the voice assistant, so Amazon released the Echo Auto recently. Yep. I subscribed, or I was hopefully one of the first people on the list to get the invite to when it's available, but I know that there are exclusive people that do have access to it already. So is this a game changer, or is this just a necessary or the next evolutionary step in telematics?
Well, I think it's the next evolutionary step. Voice recognition and some ability to reach the outside through voice. What's the weather in Chicago? What's my weather local? That's been in play for more than a decade in our vehicles today. But this connection of home now and vehicle and office and really making it sort of centric to the consumer driver, I think you're going to see that, really, really take off, as the particularly with the use of the home virtual / personal assistants becoming, de rigueur, everyday, usage. I mean, there's groups of people that are having trivia parties with Alexa, literally. I mean, there's all these different uses that are going on out there. As people become more familiar and comfortable with using the personal assistant, they'll expect that kind of connectivity and that kind of experience in the vehicle as well. So that's why OEMs, car companies, again, are integrating these voice assistants into their vehicles right now in a big way. And with the next few years, there won't be a new car on the road without that. And the Echo or the Amazon device that you were just talking about earlier is their immediate sort of, method to start, maybe even integrate that service in not the new car, but the fleet of used vehicles that are out there that don't have that capability right now.
I want to pivot a little bit, because we've been talking a lot about kind of defining the elements of telematics and talking about some of the different applications that could happen. Let's talk about first off, my belief is that telematics will become a greater talking point, obviously it is, right? Like you said, if you don't define it as telematics, if you call it a connected car, then sure, it's already being talked about widely and everything. However, the engineers that are needed to further develop connected cars, there doesn't seem to be a superfluous amount of engineers out there who are in this space. So I want to maybe get into, first off, you know, you had mentioned when you were at Toyota in deploying simple features of telematics, it was still a Herculean effort. Can you maybe describe for us what did that 150 team division comprise of at Toyota? So like the different departments, things of that nature.
Well, there was the business unit lead that I would say would be, you know, my responsibility in my group. You know, we were the ones who set the overall strategy. We were the ones who had to identify, vet, and rank and score the critical ecosystem contributors, participants, business partners that we had to engage with. We would develop the business models necessary, the forecast on, you know, how deep and wide would this implementation go. You know, we were the business owners, but attached to us internally was a number of different entities: engineering, both we would call vehicle side, which would, you know, involve various components of the actual vehicle itself, or the software, you know, side, and some of our tier one partners who would be responsible for the multimedia system, because most of the interface that you would interact with as a driver or occupant would be the screen, the multimedia system. So that was there was an engineering team involved in that. Of course, we had our various legal departments involved in, you know, liability issues and IP. There was you know, you can imagine the patents that were being, you know, looked at or grabbed at that time. We had our product planning department they were responsible for taking a hard look at the competition and how were we set up to compete. They would help, you know, forecast when the systems would be introduced. And our parent company was heavily involved. We had the safety systems required, in some cases, crash tests, to ensure that, as I mentioned earlier, the automatic crash notification would work. So that involved, you know, our test facilities in Michigan and in Japan. There were a lot of people that took part in this endeavor.
You know, if we look at in hindsight, then again, this was a division first started at Toyota in 2008, but now as we have advanced in our knowledge and awareness of connected cars, is there any particular department or position that either has been created now that, you know, you wish in time that, oh, hey, I wish we had that person, I wish we had that department going on in our division?
Well, first of all, the division was created actually in the late 90s. That's okay. I mean, we went through a few iterations, but my very first group on this endeavor, we called ourselves the NETCAR team, net like network or internet, and there were just five of us. But by the time I left, there
were hundreds.
You guys
weren't very creative, huh?
Yep. We just, you know, borrowed interest. That's all we could come up with. But I think it's probably where the industry is now. It is all about the interface. We have become so dependent and reliant on screens. Dennis is looking at one right now as he's queuing up his next question to me. I can see that. But whether it be your handheld device, whether it's your laptop, your desktop, you know, the interface screen in your vehicle, I think had I had my druthers back then, it would have been to have a team capable of and the autonomy to set the entire experience up in terms of the screen and have it mirror, as it were, the user experience today with your handheld, your iPad, or, you know, your tablet or your phone. So I think that, and that's happening in the industry now, is there is more autonomy going on. There are groups that are being forged and stood up at car companies that are taking the user experience and the interface over from, let's say, suppliers or from, you know, other parts of the engineering team within the car company, and they're really focusing on the experience to enable that familiarity you have with your phone today.
is it? So I just conducted a recording session with an AR and VR company. I mean, is there would any kind of AR application in this case just either replace or add to the interface, or you know, like just the screen, or would do you, is there something about the application of AR in a connected car that could transform the vehicle into something else?
Well, I mean, I think VR, you know, VR, we'll start there because I think it's a little bit more difficult to imagine a virtual reality experience in a vehicle. But it's going to be used, I think, in, let's say, the sales process.
Yeah.
You know, in ways of bringing a dealership to you, bringing the vehicle to you to select, pick, order a vehicle through virtual reality. That is being explored now as an alternative to the retail experience, as we all know, the typical dealership visit. But aspects of whether it's artificial, or I like to call it augmented, you know, reality, sure, there's some areas where the driver behavior, how the vehicle is used, where the vehicle is, some of that data can be used in the cloud with the car company or with a adjacent business partner to allow greater experience, you know, for the vehicle, you know, driver or occupant. I wouldn't say that there's huge opportunities there, but definitely I think there is some future with AR in the vehicle. VR, true VR is kind of hard to imagine. However, having said that, as we move into the autonomous space, as you know, the reliance for the driver to have direct input with the vehicle in terms of controls, that's why this whole connected experience is so important. That's why manufacturers, car companies are investing millions, billions in partnerships with other entities that can ensure, as AVs, autonomous vehicles, ramp up, that they have a place at the table with the experience that's going to occur in the vehicles. And I mean, there'll be a time in the future where you might put your VR, you know, glasses on, or have a complete VR experience in an autonomous vehicle that's driving you from point A to point B, and you have no care in the world in terms of the safety of yourself or others because of the various, you know, AV technologies that are in use to get you there safely.
That's an interesting way of describing it that I haven't heard or thought about before, in that as opposed to looking at autonomous vehicles and connected vehicles, electric vehicles as different silos that are, you know, each automaker, a technology company is investing in those silos, that the connected car is really the bridge to how automakers, I'm going to make this claim now, how automakers can stay relevant in the future of autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, what will become clear is that the automakers will be, it's a service, you know, it's this mobility as a service, like platform or service, software as a service, PaaS, SaaS, now it's MaaS or MaaS, mobility as a service. So what will differentiate car companies is how they've grappled with, grasped, and really leveraged the transportation and mobility experience. And I mean, you can imagine it, they're, you know, having broadband capabilities in a vehicle, watching a full-length feature film from here to, you know, to Las Vegas, from LA to Las Vegas, and, you know, never touching a vehicle control. Well, the automaker is responsible now for that conveyance of information to the vehicle, to the occupant, in a way that I've said to other business partners in the past makes the brand and the experience indispensable in the consumer's mindset. Is that in a Lexus vehicle, I know that I can get the content that I want, when I want it, where I want it, and a Toyota vehicle as well, because these guys, the greater Toyota Lexus people, have grasped the importance of connectivity in a way that makes my life great when, yeah. When I'm in my vehicle.
Well, it's certainly then, you know, I haven't quite articulated this all the way through yet, but in a lot of ways, I almost see that automakers or just the automotive industry in general over the last years has been ruling this space, you know, just the space of vehicles. However, because of ride hailing, the autonomous vehicles, the autonomous technologies, V2V, V2I, transportation seems to now be the industry that is almost swallowing automotive. However, to your point, as automakers do dive in and provide that connected vehicle experience, because they are the ones that will be able to do that, right? They, obviously, the one thing that the automakers have, to a certain extent, perfected is exactly what they do, the manufacturing of these vehicles. So it's going to be very tough for an Apple company or any kind of Google subsidiary company to ever go in and try to provide these types of connected experiences without the automakers having a very significant buy-in to that type of user experience. So, in kind of the last question here, and talking about the core of a telematics company. So again, you were detailing the different departments that existed at Toyota. So I was asked a question the other day where a mother was asking me, "Hey, my daughter would like to get into automotive," and I was advocating for telematics. But then, you know, the conversation kind of was then geared towards, well, where does she go to study? What does she study? Are there any universities that would specialize in this type of field, or do you have to major in more of your general majors, such as information technology, telecommunications, things of that nature?
Well, that's a great question. I think that from my perspective, I am seeing the reliance on the tech community and the tech capabilities and skill sets as being things that the OEMs are bringing in house. When I say OEM, I mean car companies. Yeah. What I think what's happening is they are recognizing that they can either outsource those roles to, you know, a third party who might be able to bring in the skill sets and the resources necessary, or they can go ahead and get into that area themselves. I think that that's why companies like Toyota Research Institute have put in place offices in the areas of, like, in Cambridge because of MIT, you know, in the Silicon Valley because of the likes of Stanford or Cal, and in the Michigan area near the U of M. So I guess I would counsel someone that if you're good at math, the area of engineering, whether it be mechanical or electrical or software, I really do think that those are the areas that are going to be in demand, whether it's for automotive or for the tech world, and both of which are here to stay. The business aspects of the telematics or infotainment or the connected vehicle world can be had by smart MBAs. So the business schools, I think, this is always a great underpinning. One of my key partners in crime and in business at Toyota went back to school. He was already a degreed engineer, but went back to get his MBA because he recognized the importance of the business aspects associated with this. And you have to sort of talk the talk and walk the walk from a business perspective as well. So that's would be my answer. Okay. Is that I don't think there's enough engineers, to help propel us and keep us, catch us up and keep us ahead of all the demand, whether it's electronics or otherwise.
All right, let's pivot to another topic here. We'll just we won't get into this too much. Well, I guess we'll see. So, are you familiar with the proposed Assembly Bill 2107?
by number? No, and I apologize.
So this was the...
Is this a trick question? This is where we cut the interview short?
Yeah, right. Sorry, you're not qualified to speak this on the subject anymore.
Yeah, yeah, this wasn't an approved question.
Well, so there was the Assembly Bill 2107 that eventually got vetoed, but up until it got vetoed by the governor, prior to it, it was passing the Assembly. The New Car Dealers Association in California had passed it resoundingly. And it was just, I mean, a bulk of it was talking about warranties and how dealers can essentially be reimbursed at a higher rate from the manufacturers. But there was also a provision in this Assembly bill where dealers implemented or stated how they did not want manufacturers to get involved in any kind of in any way the direct sale of these vehicles. And to that end, they were describing how, let me see here. Let me read what was stated here. If the manufacturer branch, distributor or distributor branch is also a franchisor or an affiliate of a franchisor, it may not compete with any franchisee, okay, in this case a dealer, by directly or indirectly offering vehicles for sale, lease, which that's standard for franchise laws, or subscription. So yep. Now this gets into the whole, yep, you know, Porsche Passport, Volvo has a program, Cadillac. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now you have dealers who were, I'll make a charge statement, waging a war with automakers that perhaps is preventing the more widespread adoption of connected vehicle or connected car technology. Without having to take a political stance in this, first off, I would argue that I would not be, as a user, as someone involved in the automotive industry, I would not be for it. I would want dealers and automakers to almost be laissez-faire about this for the time being, because we don't know what this is. But is there something that maybe I'm not seeing or am I missing about how, you know, how dealers and how automakers are viewing subscriptions?
Right. So I didn't know the Assembly bill by number, but I know enough about the topic to be dangerous. So this is a tough one. I mean, I see the content of the bill. Now, thank you for reading it to me as being a way for the dealership entities out there to kind of signal an early warning sign. There have always been, but for as long as I've been in the business, multiple decades, state and dealer franchise laws that protect the dealer as being the ultimate point of sale. And those who are behind the bill that you had read aptly, you know, recognize that the world is changing and that mobility is changing. And there are arguments around that are suggesting that individual single, you know, sales of vehicles will begin to decline as the mobility habits of the world here at home, America, change and evolve. So I look at this as a volley, a shot across the bow of those who are thinking that by leaving the door open to subscriptions will be have negative impact on the dealer. It's a tough issue that every car company is grappling with. The dealers invest a ton of money in their facilities and service areas. There's something like 18,000 dealers nationally, and I think 32,000 franchises. They are in many respects the front line for a car company. And there are apt to be changes in the relationship with the customer and the dealer over time. But I think that the dealers, they absorb a lot of things that the car company doesn't have to deal with directly with the customer from a sales and service perspective and others. So it's pretty easy for the pundits out there to say, well, the dealers are going to go away, and that's going to be, you know, give way to the subscription model where it's an all-in monthly, you know, number for you or I to own whatever vehicle make. And with that, I get maintenance and service, and I can switch that vehicle over after 2 years to another vehicle, and it can be delivered to my home. This is going to take some time to sort out. There may be future scenarios where the dealer is holding and hosting a whole fleet of autonomous vehicles, or a whole fleet of vehicles that are available for ride-hailing, operators. So, you know, I see that bill and that passage within the bill as an early sort of signal flare to try to carve out, you know, the ground that they sort of, quote, own now. But to the extent that laws will allow, I think you'll see some pilot programs initially. You named two, aptly. Even the Lexus, the new UX, has a subscription model tied to it. It doesn't disenfranchise the dealer, but there is a different twist on it. You'll see changes, you'll see some pilots, but until the laws allow, the dealers are going to be part of the equation. Or until the laws disallow, I should say.
Yeah, okay. So just as one follow-up to this, one of the more recent things that the Department of Transportation has come out is their version 3 autonomous guide. Refining some of the different... I wouldn't even say policies, because there's not really any policies just yet. But I mean, just the guidelines, the framework for what autonomous vehicles would look like in the future. And they're taking comments up until the beginning of December. You know, from your standpoint and everything that you've been involved in, is there would you advocate for people presuming you advocate for people to chime in? Would there be any particular subject matter that you believe that people should be asking questions about or commenting on, you know, how V2V works, what V2, you know, how V2I should work, and so forth and so on?
Well, I think it comes down to safety. And I've been part of these future notices of proposed rulemaking where I had to fly into Washington and visit with entities and talk about why it was important to the company I worked with. But as individuals, I think that we should all hold ourselves in the car business accountable to be able to correctly, you know, operate these vehicles from a safety perspective. That, you know, are they, you know, properly seeing and hearing and sensing the world around them so that you could truly take hands off the wheel kind of approach. That would really be my only comment there, is that to ensure that there are some guideposts involved that keep those accountable for building and operating these vehicles in a safe manner. That'd just be my soundbite on that one.
And well, so then to if we're to recap everything that's been going on with telematics since you've been involved, again, let's just say we're looking through John's eyes right now, everything that you have been witness to in telematics, you know, what can we either look forward to over the next couple of years? What can we be hopeful about? You know, tell us, Mr. Aristocrat, John, what is the future?
I think it's going to be more centered on the user. I think that we started this industry all about, you know, the car company and what we can do, but I think it's all going to become very, very user-centric. I think that the right sort of deployments, features and functions and capabilities of these services will recognize that the consumer is king. So I think you're going to see this sort of confluence of different parts of our lives coming together in a unified, you know, ubiquitous experience, truly, that you can direct and connect from your handheld the same way you can do the same from your vehicle, the same that you can do from office or home. So I think that I think the future is bright. You know, there are huge acquisitions and partnerships that are coming into play out there, where, you know, one of the number one vehicle hardware companies was acquired by, you know, one of the number one, you know, device handheld phone producers.
Who is this?
Well, it was some time ago. It was, you know, Harman was acquired by Samsung. You know, so
is it like Harman Kardon or
Harman International. Okay, Harman Kardon is one of their sub brands, yeah, uh-huh. But. You know, these companies are getting it, and so there's going to be continued sort of acquisitions and partnerships, bringing together, you know, the smart thinking, you know, software code writing kind of thought processes with the ultimate devices, and I'm so bullish on this industry. It was a long time coming, and I'll also say that the esprit de corps that is going on out there, and in terms of my view, through my lens, the car companies are getting it now. Back in the day when we were standing this up, there were a lot of naysayers. You know, we took a lot of early arrows, and, you know, got, you know, cut on the razor wire, you know, a lot to introduce these products and services now. Now, this is table stakes. There's a huge amount of investment going in. A lot of the R&D budgets are being allocated into this whole connectivity space, and the adjacency and of autonomous and the EV experience, the electric vehicles, is all coming together around having this connected sort of individual, and all the data coming off the car will help provide the car company with the ability to, fix problems before they start. You know, there's a huge amount of learnings that are coming off of the vehicles now that the engineering departments can canvas ongoing and help avoid breakdowns or to design interim fixes that can be deployed over the air without even touching the vehicle, which is another dealer issue, because we want to send our customers to dealers so that they can get parts and service repair. But some of the functions, some of the fixes can occur without even touching the vehicle. So it's there's a lot of momentum, and there's a lot of new faces, new companies in this space. It's way beyond automotive now. It's truly a new communication device on vehicle.
Yeah,
on
wheels. As my good man Joe Schuster of Honda of downtown LA says, automotive is cool again.
Yeah, it sure is, and it's beyond fuel economy, or fit and finish, or ride comfort. All those things that we used to sweat years ago. It's about how easy is it for me to bring my content into the vehicle and carry on my day in my life, in a seamless, fashion. So yeah, it's a brave new world.
Well, John, you're off the hot seat.
I am. Okay.
Well, hey, so look, what's on tap for you? First off, I guess, how can people get in touch with you if they wanted to outreach to you? How can people get in touch with you?
Well, personal email is jonbucci1@gmail. That's one good way. I am helping to support a consultancy now but maybe that's probably the best way to reach me. I my role now is to kind of pay it forward. I know it sounds like it's an easy sort of, soundbite, but there's a lot of things I think that I went through in the early days that applies today, how to set up the organization to cope with this new and changing future, how to ensure success with large scale programs that, are contemplated to launch these new and different services, how to bring the right ecosystem partners into the mix. There's a lot of things that I went through that we all went through in my team that were, learned as we went. It was a lot of teething. And I think that experience can, like I said, be paid forward. So that's my role now, is to help educate.
Yeah, and quite honestly, thank you for that. I mean, I guess you've incurred the battle wounds. You're perhaps suffering from PTSD of some sort. But yet, you know, for people like myself and everyone else that could be coming into this industry, we are all grateful to people like you who have paved that way.
So. Well, thanks, Dennis. It's been a pleasure being here, and I'd be happy to be on your program again sometime.
We will definitely do this again. Absolutely. Listeners, be sure you check out the episode page. I will put his contact information on there. And again, we will have John back soon enough because there's just a lot of different things going on. Of course, coming up here will be Automobility LA, which John will be at. I will be at as well. And then John is also going to be at CES in January.
And the North American International Auto Show.
So if you're going to be at any of those events, look us both up. Thank you to our good friend John Bucci for sharing his insight into the world of telematics, also known as the connected vehicle experience.
Listeners, stay tuned as our next episode will be a bonus episode where we will provide an audible tour of this year's LA Auto Show. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast or follow us on Facebook to stay up to date on the future of automotive, the future of transportation, and the dealership of the future. And how do we end every episode?
Cheers! Prost! L'chaim! Kipis! Nastravi! Salud! Kampai! Mabruk! Tutsins! Gambe! Yamas! To the connected customer experience.